The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Chairs No Waiting, episode number 573, Maggie Peterson Interview Part 1. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you by the folks over at weaversdepartmentstore.com. Go by and check out Weavers. They got a brand new book over there called Mayberry Netherlands. And you can go check that out. It's got all kinds of information in there, songs from the show, 91 of the songs, something you definitely want to check out. Great book. Go check it out. And while you're there, you might want to pick up Aunt Bee's Mayberry Cookbook. It's a brand new hardcover edition for the 60th anniversary of the Andy Griffith Show. Head over to weaversdepartmentstore.com and check it out. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners like you. The executive producer of episode number 573 is Jeff Gossett. Thank you, Jeff. Jeff helped me out a lot for this week's show. Folks, we're going to be hearing an interview from Maggie Peterson. It's an interview. It's going to be a part one. By the way, who am I? I'm Alan Newsom, your host for Two Chairs No Waiting. It's great to be here with you. I always enjoy spending some time with you here in Mayberry, and this interview is no exception. Back in 2018, they had an event over in Calhoun, Georgia, A Touch of Mayberry, is that what it was called? Yeah, A Touch of Mayberry. And at that was Maggie Peterson, Charlene Darlin, and Ronnie Schell. They were there. And Otis, Kenneth Junkin, and myself as Floyd were there as well. It was a great, fun evening, and we really had a good time. And Steve Barfield is the one who put on that show. It was absolutely a great show. And as part of that, I was lucky enough to be able to interview Maggie on stage there at the show. So that's the first thing we're going to hear tonight. We're going to talk about some of that, but I'm going to talk to you after that. And I want to mention it right now that Maggie Peterson is, they're raising money for Maggie. I think you know this. She's had a lot of health issues and has been in situations where she needs help. And I definitely want to encourage you to go and donate to her. We're going to hear from her in just a minute, but if you can help her out, in the last 13 days, she's raised about $18,700. So, but they're looking to try to raise about $50,000 for her. And it's her nephew and niece that signed up for this, Ben Eaton and Amy Royer. They're the ones that signed up for this GoFundMe campaign for Maggie. And there's even a video there. If you go and look at that page and you can get to it. I made an easy link for you. It's called bit.ly/Maggie Peterson. So if you go and type that in, you'll be able to go and donate some money or help Maggie out and go and see the situation. So I may talk about that some more at the end of the show, but for now, let's go hear that. And following that, you'll be able to hear from Randy Turner. So stick around, folks. We have got some real fun for you. So here's our interview, part one with Maggie Peterson.
Hey, good job. This was the Jasper Mountain Boys. I don't know if we mentioned that or not. They did a good job. Hey, let's get in here. Now, y'all see me doing Floyd, and I do Floyd. I've been doing Floyd since 1994 is when I started doing this. So I've been doing it a long time. But I'm also, for those that may not know, I also run the imayberry.com website, and I do a podcast. My name's Alan Newsom, and I do a podcast called Two Chairs No Waiting. So I'm going to take my coat off, because on that podcast, I don't do Floyd. I actually interview people, and I get to interview cast members from the show, and we get to hear from them and memories and stuff that they had. So tonight, we're in for a real treat. Because we're going to get to interview Maggie Pearson in the law. So this is great. A real treat, and I hope you're going to enjoy this. I know you are, so you're going to be able to sit back and relax. And we're going to talk about from Greeley to Mayberry. So let's see a little clip that we got here, I believe. From Greeley to Mayberry is what we're going to be talking about. And Maggie, before that, they were the Jada, I believe, is the right quartet with Maggie there. And we got this still. Look at that. That's her when she was really young. Look at that with the pigtails. Isn't that cool? So, and there's a newer picture of her with the Mayberry Memories book that you can't get anymore, but it's a great book. So, folks, let's introduce here and have out Maggie Peterson. Come on. Just have a seat there. Make yourself comfortable. All right.
Oh, what a nice crowd we got.
Yeah. Very nice. Yeah, a lot of folks in here tonight. All right. So we've seen these clips here. Now, Greeley to Mayberry. That was one of the first things we heard you singing there. So tell us a little bit about growing up in Greeley.
Greeley, Colorado. It's a little town that's between Denver and Cheyenne, and it's kind of like a Mayberry kind of town. The thing is, I think we all have a Mayberry in our background, and mine was Greeley, Colorado. Everybody knew everybody, and everybody was friendly. You didn't have to lock your doors at night, and it was my own little Mayberry, and I loved growing up there. We were about 50 miles from the mountains and between Denver and Cheyenne, right in the northern Colorado.
So there in Greeley, your family, they were musical, they were unusual. What about, tell us about your family?
Well, they were unusual, that's for sure. I grew up in a musical family. My brother played the banjo. My sister played the piano, and my father had earned his way through medical school playing the banjo. So, as Briscoe said, if you got time to breathe, you got time for music. And that kind of was our household mentor in our household. We always had a lot of music as I was growing up. My brother Jimmy played the banjo, like I said, and oh, I think we're ready for that next clip.
Oh, yeah, let's see the clip there.
Yeah.
Let's see this.
This is a fantasy. Here we go. There I am singing with my sister playing the piano and my brother playing the banjo. Now, this was in my Grandma Peterson's house, and my brother found my dad's banjo underneath the feather bed in the bedroom, and it was love at first sight. He fell in love with that banjo. In fact, he never put it down. He still hasn't put it down to this day. Wow. So he started playing the banjo, and at home he put together a little group, as you said, the Jada Quartet. Now, don't ask me why we named it the Jada Quartet. There was an old song in the 20s called Jada, 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 Jing, Jing, Jing. And we kind of did sort of 20s Dixieland kind of music, so I guess that's where it came from. But it stuck. With Jada Quartet.
So when you found the banjo under the bed, was your dad glad he found the banjo? Or?
Well, I think it's mixed emotions. He was glad in a way, but in another way, he thought, oh no, I thought he was going to be a doctor like me, and here he's off on a tangent on a banjo with the Jadas.
Oh, that's great.
The Jada Quartet, we were a hot little group. We played all over Colorado, and we played on the Arthur Godfrey Show. And in the summertime, we played up in the mountains in Estes Park, Colorado. Don't know if anybody's ever heard of Estes Park.
Yeah.
Before you do that, there's a clip, I believe. I changed the photo there. I think there's a picture of you.
We would spend our summers up in Estes Park, Colorado, at a place called the Stanley Hotel.
Yeah, I know that's the next picture there. The Stanley Hotel, I know about, do you guys know where the Stanley Hotel is or what it is? Was Jack Nicholson there when you were there? That was the Shining, the Stephen King movie, remember that? That was filmed at the Stanley Hotel, that's it there.
That's it, yeah, big and scary looking.
So when you were there, were there any little girls standing in the hallway there?
You know, that was me, I thought. That little girl. No, it was great. It was really swinging at that time. It was a wonderful place to play. We played there two or three summers at the Stanley. One summer, we were playing, and we were, I must say, it sounds not very modest, but we were packing them in. I mean, the people were standing down around the corner to get in to see the Jottas. We were hot. We were hot. I'm going to tell you. One summer, Capitol Records had its convention, held its convention at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park. And we were playing there, and this guy came up to me and said, "Kid, if you ever get to New York, you look me up." Well, that was Dick Link.
Dick Link?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have a picture of Dick.
That's Dick Link.
Yeah, now he was Andy's manager.
That's right. He was Andy Griffith's manager.
Yeah.
So he was a big wig from New York, and boy, we were just all, you know, agog at this guy. But when he said, "Can you ever get to New York, look me up," that's all it took. That stuck in my mind. I couldn't wait to graduate from high school and get to New York to look him up.
So you were still in high school during the time you were at the Stanley Hotel?
Yes.
You were very young.
I was very young, yes. Young and innocent and stupid. Maybe stupid? No, I don't know. Naive, that's probably the word for it.
So then you were able to go off to New York, I guess?
Well, yes. After he said that, of course, we couldn't wait to graduate and get to New York. So the Jottas bought an Oldsmobile town car, or we bought it for us, and we put all our equipment, the banjos and the drums and all of that, into the back of that car and took off for New York. Now, we'd never been east of Omaha, believe me, so this was a big deal. My mother and father, I don't know why, they were so trusting. Of course, I was with my brother, and they were so... I remember him standing in the driveway looking at us pull out of the driveway in our funny old car, and they were kind of crying. But my father said something to me before I left. Now, this is going back because we all now have these cell phones, but at this time, you had to make long-distance calls and all of that. I'd be probably too young to remember, but we had phones. And my father said to me, "I don't care what you do. I don't care if you murder somebody. I don't care. You can always call home, collect." So I had that in my heart. I knew I was safe.
That's great.
Yeah.
So it was you and your brothers. That's all, y'all headed toward New York.
Yes, we did.
There's your parents there on the screen.
They are.
And so y'all headed off to New York. So what happened? I mean, you were still young at this time.
Yeah.
So you were how old then? So
I was about 18.
18, heading to New York City, the big city. And what happened when you got there, right?
Well, we didn't know. Of course, we didn't even know what the city was. I'd never seen a big city before. So it was like really, I remember everything was so, there was no grass, you know, there was, everything was paved and pigeons and cars, and it was quite a culture shock for me. But when we got there, we did look up Dick Link, and he started getting us auditions. So he was quite a mover and shaker, and he got us an audition for the Perry Como show. Now, I don't know if y'all remember the Perry
Como. Yeah.
That was big, yeah. Big show, yeah. Big variety show.
There
we are. And We went into the Perry Como offices, and I tell you, that we caused an earthquake that kept coming out of the offices. You got to see these kids. Come on down. Look at these kids. And they left us, and they put us on the show the next week.
Wow.
So that was really...
So this is right after you get to New York. Yeah. You're coming from Greeley, a little Mayberry-sized town, show up in New York City, and you get to be on Perry Como in a week?
It's just about a week. Now, isn't that amazing? Of course, at that time, I didn't think anything out. I doesn't everybody.
Because it always happened to you every time you did that.
Exactly.
So that was great.
Wow. We were on the show, and I remember Lena Horne, the beautiful singer, was on the show at that time, and we were both in the makeup room at the same time. Here's Maggie from Greeley, excuse me, and right next to me, beautiful Lena Horne with her long eyelashes. Oh, I was fascinated.
Wow.
But it was quite a treat.
So the style of music that Judy Brothers, that's jazz?
Well,
that music?
It's kind of, it was kind of 20s and maybe Dixieland, sort of Dixieland.
Because to me it sounds like what I hear at Disney World, when I go to Disney World. That's the kind of music you hear at Disney World over in
exactly.
Frontier Land. That's exactly what it sounded like to me. So I wasn't sure what the exact style was.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But it was fun. I mean, it was fun to do. You can obviously tell just from hearing it.
Yes, it was happy.
You know,
it
had a great time doing
it. We did have fun. We had so much fun.
Wow, so okay, so you got there, you got to see Perry Como, you were on the show there with Lena Horne and Pat Boone.
Pat Boone saw the show, and he was so excited that he called in and hired us, so we were on his show. We were on his show for a whole season, just from that one Perry Como show. So we were regulars on the Pat Boone show.
Wow.
We played the Roxy Theater, we played all over the East Coast. It was quite a deal.
So anybody not old enough to know who Pat Boone is, just look him up on the internet later. And Lena Horne, you'll figure all these people out. This is a big deal getting to do this stuff. And you're coming out of Greeley. I'm just kind of amazed that happened.
Well,
not at the talent level. Obviously, the talent of your family was
luck.
Obviously there.
It's
and
luck.
And you also had some luck because you met Richard.
Richard Blake, yes.
And that is amazing. So you're at the Roxy Theater, you're doing all this stuff. So do you do any records?
We did make one record. It was for Warner Brothers Records, and they called it, like you said, The Most Happy Sound. That was the name of our album. And before we show you this clip, I want you to pay special attention to the way the Jottas look. Me and my brother and the two boys, we're all kind of with a funny face and not really flattering pictures, but I want you to pay a special attention to the bartender. Do we see that?
Yeah, let's
see
that.
There we are. No, I mean, really.
Yeah, the bartender's there. If you're looking from your side over to your right there, see him leaning forward there.
See how cute he looks? He's all smiles. He's leaning on the bar there, and we're all just kind of,
That's an Avery Schreiber mustache there.
That's right.
Great big mustache.
My point being that we didn't choose the picture. He was the producer of the record. Guess who got to select the picture?
The bartender. Oh, the bartender was the producer of the record. Ah, so that's why he looks good.
That's right.
Oh, that's awesome. So that was your album there. So how did you get picked up? Or, well, you already talked about the picture, but what happened after you got to New York? Okay, so you got there, you're on Perry Como, you're on Pat Boone, you got a record deal, and you're 18, 19 years old at this time. Things are amazing. This is pretty amazing. So what happened after?
Well, my brother wanted to go be a doctor, so the boys went back to Colorado, left me alone in New York City. So that was
by yourself, just
all by myself.
18, 19, 20-year-old.
Oh,
Maggie.
I tell you, this was a low point for me.
Wow.
I never really had felt homesick, really, because my brother had been with me, and things were happening so fast, and we were being such celebrities. And there I was alone, all by myself, and my brother had left his banjo by the door. He hadn't taken it with him. And every time I looked at that banjo, I just started crying. And I cried for several weeks before things started picking up again.
So wow, that's pretty amazing to me. So, Dick Leek was still
involved with you, Andy's manager.
That's
your,
right.
Your, I guess he was your manager at that point?
Yes, my mom, he became my manager.
So what did he help you, I suppose?
Then? Well, he did. He put me with another musical group. This was a vocal group from Ohio University, and they sang four-way vocals, but they were excellent musicians, and they picked up some of the Jada's arrangements, and we played. I played with the Ernie Mariani Trio.
Oh, there they are.
So we toured around the country.
You went on the road with this group.
That's right.
And how long had you known them by the time you were?
Actually, Ernie was a friend of Dick Link's.
Okay.
So and Ernie had this group, so he put me with the group.
Okay.
So we toured around the country for several years, played all the nightclubs. We played the Copacabana.
Really?
Wow. And the Playboy clubs, and then. In Nevada, all the casinos, we played all that. Aruba, we had a nice little jaunt here around the country.
So you made it from New York now, so you've been to Greeley, over to New York, made it back across the country toward Nevada. So when did you make it over to Hollywood and move from, because this is all, we're all talking here so far, it's all music, you're
that's
singing.
Right. That's right.
You're involved in that. So how did
I was on the road with the Ernie Mariani Trio. Andy was busy in Hollywood, and they were getting a show together for him. So that's when they put the Andy Griffith Show together.
All right. So that is part one of our interview with Maggie. I hope you guys are enjoying that. This is just getting up to the part where she's on the Andy Griffith Show, or starts to do in the Andy Griffith Show, be a part of the Andy Griffith Show. So, wow, I didn't know all that about Maggie. I hope you enjoyed it. If you're watching the video version of the show, you were able to see many of the images and that she was talking about during her presentation. But hopefully, even if you're only listening to the audio, you enjoyed just the word pictures that were being provided. It was a great opportunity. I really appreciate Steve for having Otis and myself there. Kenneth and I were able to be at that event. Ronnie Schell was there. So it was a great evening of Mayberry fun back in 2018. So, wow, what a great time we had. So now we're going to hear from Randy Turner, but stick around after that. I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about Maggie, but let's hear from This Week in Mayberry History.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Gomer and Cooper Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild of the Mayberry Historical Society.
The first season episode, Andy and Opie Housekeepers, originally aired on March the 13th, 1961. The episode introduced the long-running character played by Hope Summers called Bertha Edwards. Clara Edwards. In the episode, Andy and Opie show themselves not to be the best housekeepers while Aunt Bea is away helping her cousin Edgar. After they finally cleaned the house the day she was to return, Opie commented, "Boy, is she going to be happy when she finds out we can get along without her." This caused Andy to realize Aunt Bea would not feel needed if she came home to a clean house, so he and Opie made the house a mess again. Eventually, the bus was always shown to stop in Mayberry beside the multi-sided building in the middle of Main Street that originally held Walker's Drugstore on the front side and later Franklin Pharmacy on the back. But in this first season episode, reference was made to a bus station. As they are leaving to pick up Aunt Bea, a character Andy refers to as Miss Edwards stops by. After they leave, Bea's friend exhibits what became her trademark trait of being a busybody when she looks inside the house without their permission and sees it as a mess. The fact that Miss Edwards was kind-hearted in spite of being a busybody is then seen when she takes it upon herself to clean the house, so her friend Bea won't have to come home to a bad job. The fact that she was able to clean the house also meant the bus station referred to in season one must have been a fair distance from the Taylor home, since she would not have thought she would be able to clean the house so thoroughly in just a few minutes. Of course, when the Taylors return, Andy and Opie are stunned to see the house so clean, while Aunt B has just the reaction they feared. Andy's quick thinking enables them to convince Aunt B they had only partially cleaned, restoring her self-value. In the epilogue, Miss Edwards stops by, and we learn her first name is Bertha. When she is offended after Aunt B tells her about the lack of cleanliness of the house when she returned, saying it looked like it had been taken care of by somebody who would be more at home in a pig pen. Andy Griffith was fond of using real people's names for characters in the series. Andy's wife's maiden name was Edwards, hence the character's last name. After a second appearance in season one, in the next season, Hope Summers seemed to be playing the same character, though her first name now was Clara. While one could argue this was a different character, most fans and books consider her to be the same one. She was still a good friend of Aunt B's, yet still a busybody, often sticking her nose where it did not belong. And the Andy Griffith Show was careless with names more than once, sometimes simply because the writer simply forgot the previous name. Thus, Bobby Fleet became Freddie Fleet, even though by Freddie's references to previous visits to Mayberry, he was obviously still the same character. Emma Brand became Emma Watson, and so on. When Clara first appeared in Season 2, her last name was not given. But in the classic episode Pickle's Story that season, Aunt B called her by her full name, Clara Johnson. Clara did not appear all that often during the black and white years, another example of a character being so strong that fans often assumed they were in more episodes than they really were. For example, Hope played Clara only once in the third season, and twice in the fourth. In all those appearances, her last name was still given as Johnson. Hope only appeared three times in the fifth season, but her last name reverted to Edwards in that last black and white year. John Masters first used the new name when discussing that she would be playing Lady Mayberry in the Founders Day pageant. The name was likely changed back to Edwards as another nod to Barbara Griffith's maiden name. Some fans tried to correct the continuity gap by saying Edwards was Clara's maiden name, while Johnson had been her married name, and she for some reason reverted back to it beginning in season 5. Regardless, she played Clara Edwards the rest of the series. Interestingly, in Hope Summers' final appearance during the black and white years, she had clearly been brought in due to availability at the last minute. The credits listed Hope's character as Miss Bedloe when she complained about the Sultan's favorite Hoochie Coochie dance being performed in the carnival, in spite of Floyd's insistence it was high culture. But while the credits may have said she was Miss Bedloe, Andy still greeted her as Miss Edwards. After Don Knotts left, Clara Edwards was used more frequently, and also carried over into the spinoff, Mayberry RFD. Well, that's it for this week. As always, thanks for listening. And remember to take Andy's advice and go out there and act like somebody.
Thank you, Randy, for another great report. It's so fun to hear from Randy every week. If you want to make sure you don't miss out on any of the amazing things that Randy does every week on the internet about the Andy Griffith Show, send him an email at turnersgrade@gmail.com. Turnersgrade@gmail.com. And he probably does, I don't know, 11 things a week. So he didn't mention that. Of course, she won the prize at least 10 times.
11.
Right? 11 times. Yeah. So for the best pickles, Clara. Now, Clara was also, and Randy didn't mention it, I'm not doubting that he knew it, but she was also the voice of Mrs. Butterworth. Now, some of you are old enough to remember this. Some of the younger folks may not be. If you're too young, you don't remember. But Mrs. Butterworth was the bottle of syrup, and it would talk to you and stuff about putting it on the pancakes and stuff. Well, she was the voice of Mrs. Butterworth for a long time too. So anyway, Clara is pretty amazing. All right. So thank you again, Randy. I appreciate that. And I just want to reiterate that we're love Maggie, and I'm so thankful for everything folks have been able to do for her. She has this fundraiser. As I told you, you can go to bit.ly/Maggie Peterson, and it'll take you to the fundraiser. Otherwise, you got to go to, it's really long. I don't want to even try to read it out. It'll be in our show notes. So if you go to episode number 573, you'll be able to click on the link and go to this, or you can just go there. But Maggie has had several illnesses, not illnesses, but she's hurt herself a few times in the past year. She's injured herself. She's had surgeries to her shoulder, left both of her arms partially paralyzed, and she's in pain. And she's had undiagnosed weaknesses in her legs. And all this resulted in a fall that she got hurt. And then she was in a facility for rehab since November and just got to go home a few weeks ago. So now she's at home, but she's having to have people come in there and do treatments and help her rehabilitation. And she has to have 24/7 care. And she also is the primary caregiver of her husband, Gus, who has Alzheimer's. So, folks, anyway, this is just a great way, I think, that Maybury folks can go and be a part of something and really show how much these people, not just Maggie, but our Maybury friends, how much they have meant to us over the years. And it's been really nice to see that it's gone really well. It's been 2 weeks. Then we got about $18,000 that have been raised. So I definitely want to encourage you, if you are able, to go and consider doing that. It'd just be a nice thing to do. Folks, I would love, love, love to hear from you. If you'd like to give me a call and email me or whatever you'd like to do, you can call me at 888-684-8415. You can email me at floyd@imaybury.com or head over to twochairsnowaiting.com, and it's got all that information there. Friends, thank you for being here with me. I really want to thank you particularly for spending time with me. It's always fun to be here in Maybury with you. And until next time, we'll be back here for part two with Maggie Peterson. So come back. It's a great story. We'll get into the Maybury years and beyond. So, folks, we'll see you next time right here on Two Chairs. Good night, everybody.